Today is December 22nd, 2018, and this is episode 26 of Bulls Gold. I'm Edward Schuler. I'm joined by Salim Sudarwala. Salim, how's it going, man?
Good, Ed. Edward, we're interesting week for the Bulls. Some one really bad, got blown out, and the other two were pretty competitive games, so should be interesting to talk about it.
Yeah, the Bulls have played three games so far this week, and they'll play their fourth tomorrow against the Cleveland Cavaliers, which could be a pretty big game in terms of lottery seeding in the future. So we're going to look at that one, and we're going to look at the past three games of this week. Before we get into everything, I definitely want to give another shout-out to Morten Jensen of the NBA Pod for joining us last week for our episode. Really fun episode if you haven't checked it out yet. So let's get into the games that the Bulls have had so far this week. Yesterday, the Chicago Bulls defeated the Orlando Magic 90-80. Earlier this week, they suffered losses to the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Brooklyn Nets. As Salim acknowledged, the Oklahoma City game was not close at all, but the Brooklyn Nets game came down to the wire, and there was a high amount of ties in that game, and the Bulls ended up losing that game on the final possession with the turnover to Chris Dunn. But the story of last night's game was Lauri Markkanen, who had six shots against the Brooklyn Nets on Wednesday, and head coach Jim Boylan said that the Bulls were going to prioritize getting him the ball going forward, that it was just a miscue on their part, and for at least one game, they lived up to their promise. Markkanen went 12 of 20 from the field, finished with 32 points and 6 rebounds, including a highlight reel dunk over Nikola Vucevic yesterday. So Markkanen, who struggled so far this season since coming back from his elbow injury, showed some of those flashes that people were excited about from last season. So let's get into the games for this week. Salim, I talked to you before we started recording, and I told you that I did not get to see all of this game. So tell me the things that stood out to you about this game, especially in particular Lauri Markkanen's performance.
So the thing that sticks out to me on offensively, what the Bulls do is basically deliberately slow the ball game down and always try to do a half court set. I think that has its pros and cons. I mean, the pros is, you know, you're trying to get more quality shots and run an offensive set. But the con is where when you get a good defensive stop, you know, you're deliberately not running a fast break. That just doesn't make sense because you're letting the other team's defense set when you shouldn't be doing that, and you're giving up an opportunity to get an easy score. As far as Lauri, I think it's interesting watching him play because games like last night, you see his full arsenal on offense, where he's not just, you know, a guy that stands behind the 3-point line and just shoots, you know, volumes of threes, like takes like 8, you know, threes a game. He's not just a floor spacer. You kind of saw him getting the high-low action with Wendell, you know, do a little pick and roll stuff with Dunn and Wendell and things like that. You know, getting inside, getting a mid range, attacking the basket off the dribble. You kind of see his, like I said, you see more versatile in his offensive game and how he's able to do more than just being a 3-point shooter. And obviously, his 3-point shot was—he was choking it last night too. I think he was like hit 4 or 5 threes last night. He was, you know, money from there as well. So I think when that's a difference when he kind of becomes one of these guys that just stands around just to be like a floor spacer, he kind of gets lost in the offense. And I think that's when his teammates probably start not looking for him as well. And he's just less aggressive like that. He's just kind of standing out there, waiting to take a shot. I think that's a lot of his games have been since he's come back. And I think he's trying to, you know, kind of figure it. This late into the season, he's trying to figure things out and, you know, trying to, you know, get into game shape. You know, that takes a little bit too, just because he's been sitting out for so long. And then he's trying to, you know, figure out his role in this offense. But last night, I think that's kind of what you want to see out of Lowry, is more of a versatile performance where he's not just being used as a stretch four.
So Markkanen, he's come back and he's tried to play himself kind of back into game shape and rhythm, as you mentioned. And that's really hard, especially when you miss training camp and, well, most of training camp, and you miss preseason. So you're coming in really rusty. You're trying to sort everything out on the fly, and it's a really difficult task. And you mentioned that Markkanen is at his best when the Bulls can let him showcase the entire, you know, arsenal of his offensive game, not just shooting threes from a standstill perspective, which, of course, he's really good at, or he's pretty good at. But talk to me a little bit about what you kind of saw from Markkanen outside of that shooting. In terms of what you mentioned, like, did he do a lot of, like, off-the-dribble things? Was it, like, from the post? Like, what were the, like, the biggest things you saw from, like, that aspect in terms of off-the-dribble, post-ups, moving without the ball, things like that that you liked?
Yeah, you know, he did some dribble action. He did moving behind without the ball, just, like, off the screens. You know, kind of like I said, the rolling on the pick and roll plays like that, where he was actually being involved in the offense and not just standing out on the perimeter.
So do you think there should be, like, kind of faith that this coaching staff can consistently get Lowry Markkanen the ball in different positions, that they can use him in a variety of ways to continue getting these type of performances out of him as the season progresses?
I mean, if they involve him like they did last night, yeah, I think they can. But the tricky part is, like, because when you look at the Nets game and when you look at the game last night, there is a stark difference in how Chris Dunn was working offensively. Because a lot of the times in the Nets game, I know when I was looking back, I didn't watch the entire game, but when I was looking back, it was a lot of Chris Dunn going one-on-one. And kind of, you know, in a sense, doing not necessarily just isolation, but maybe getting a pick set for him, and, you know, kind of breaking down in the lane to go with the mid range jumper and things like that. So, you know, it's interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see how they, you know, how they go moving forward, because I think you want Chris to be more of a setup guy than being the guy who you go to as the primary offensive player. Mm-hmm. So I would like to see them do more of what they did last night, where you're getting Lowry involved offensively more so than Chris is getting, you know, just getting to be that ball handler and being the going like an ISO 101 scorer. Because in general, you know, because Lowry's obviously a more efficient scorer. So you're seeing when you're getting him in the flow of the game, you know, he had 32 points on 20 shots, whereas Chris the other day, he had I want to say he had like 24 points on like 21 shots. So, you know, it's kind of like, and it was not to say that's a bad game or anything by Chris or but necessarily, but I'm just saying, you know, there's better offensive options to do than going to him on isolation plays and things like that.
Dunn's performances this week have been interesting to me. As you pointed out, he's had some good games, and the stat lines are kind of really dependent on volume of field goal attempts rather than, you know, getting to the line a lot and making free throws or, you know, making threes. I feel like Dunn, when he does have those games, it kind of shows that he's not quite there yet in terms of being a complete scorer or being like a versatile or efficient scorer. So you would, like, as you said, you would probably prefer him to be someone that can get you 7, 8, 9 assists, maybe 14 or 15 points per game, and he can manage an offense. And the tricky thing on top of that is you mentioned that right now this team is playing in a way where when they have the ball, they're slowing down the game a lot. And the coaching staff is encouraging them to play this, you know, very slow down type of basketball to try and value possessions more and to be able to take that same style out on opponents so that they can grind them on the defensive end. You know, we as Bulls fans are very familiar with this style from the Thibodeau era, of a Skiles era. Like, we've seen these grinded out teams a lot, but it's interesting because when you look at this roster currently, and if Chris Dunn is your point guard and he's handling, you know, a lot of the ball handling responsibilities now with Zach LaVine out, I feel like Dunn is at his best in a full court game. And Fred Hoiberg talked about it a lot when, you know, he was the coach of a team. He was saying that he was kind of trusting Chris Dunn to manage that. So Dunn was doing that well enough where he was pushing pace, where he was controlling tempo, where he was getting out on the break and, you know, kind of forcing the issue. And Fred Hoiberg got to the point where he was saying, you know, I think he had a quote where he said, let's give the keys to Dunn and, you know, I trust him to run my offense. So to me, it's just weird that you look up and down this team, you see Chris Dunn at point guard, you see players who are at least above average athletically, like Dunn, LaVine, Carter, Markkanen, Hutchinson's a good athlete. I mean, there's good athletes on this roster. So, you know, given if you're looking at the score last night, 90-80, the Nets game was a low scoring game too against Oklahoma City. They didn't score much either. So to me, it's just really interesting that this team is really choosing not to get possessions against defenses that are not set. Like, I'm not really sure that I understand the approach for this team to play that style in the long term.
Yeah, I don't know, like, if that's just the idea to do it for now until they get used to the half court and then they'll speed up the offense. I don't know what the game plan is. And like, you know, we've talked about, we don't really know what Garn Pax's philosophy right now is in this rebuild. We don't know what they're doing, because obviously a few years back they're like, oh yeah, we want to get to the modern NBA, be fast pace, the space and pace game. And now they're going, they go from one extreme to the other. Now they're going all the way to back to that old grinded out Thibodeau offense game style, where you're not, but and I shouldn't even say Thibodeau, because Tibbs prioritized getting out on the break. Mm-hmm. He wanted to get those defensive stops and then push the ball as whenever you could. It wasn't like just, hey, I want to only do half court sets every time, every chance I get. So, you know, it's, I don't know. Yeah, like I said, I don't know what the thought process here is. When are they going to, you know, kind of, are they just, this is what they're going to do from here on out and that's it? Or are they going to speed it up at some point again?
Yeah, I'm wondering when they are going to start emphasizing a more full court balanced offensive attack. You know, granted, I don't expect this offense to be, you know, top 10 or something, you know, at any point of this season. But, you know, I just want to see kind of like a foundation on that side of the ball that makes sense. And again, it's good to see that their defense has really come along well. I think Casey Johnson tweeted something that the Bulls are 11th in defensive rating since Jim Boylan took over. And obviously that includes the game against Boston, where they were just completely, you know, run out the building. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive given the circumstances that they're actually being able to stop teams now. But at the same time, when you see this team playing, you know, on the road or at home and having these long drawn out possessions where it honestly doesn't even seem like they know who a shot is coming from in that possession. Like, it doesn't seem like anyone really has a clue. It's almost like a large game of hot potato, in the sense that, okay, whoever has the ball when 4 or 5 seconds is coming up, we got to get a shot off. And it's just, before that, it's just straight up improvisation. I don't know. It's just a really weird development from this team overall.
Yeah, like last two games, the most fast break points, they had like 6 and 8. I mean, you figure, and I mean, and Brooklyn had about 13 turnovers. So, I mean, you figure you could get a few more easier buckets from some of their turnovers. So, like I said, you know, we'll see how that works out.
What did you think about the final play in the Brooklyn Nets game where I believe Lauri Markkanen was the inbounder and Justin Holiday got it, and they were trying to get the ball to Chris Dunn on an isolation and they were unable to, and it was eventually a turnover for the Brooklyn Nets to eventually win that game. What did you think about what do you think so far about the end of game situations from Jim Boylan and given the current personnel? I know there's no Zach LaVine out there who's kind of been looked to as our closer, so you know they're trying to see what's going to work without him. But what do you think so far of what Jim Boylan's shown in these late game situations?
I'm not sure what his philosophy is, like I said, but it just seemed like sloppily executed. And maybe not easy. Like, you know, you're not trying to get a guy open either. It's not sure if they were, you know, did a well enough job to get Chris the ball. They were just kind of forcing the pass in when it wasn't really there and would resulted in a turnover.
Yeah, I'm not really sure about going back to Dunn in the clutch, because I do think it's weird that we didn't really go to Markkanen on that play, even though that game overall was strange in general, given that Markkanen only had 6 shots. But I still do want to see Markkanen have some more of those like late game situations where maybe we can, you know, run some action for him to open him up, or maybe get him going in the post for something really quick. Like I'm interested in seeing that more so than trying to see if Dunn can, you know, improvise off the dribble. Because as you mentioned, it's something he can do every now and then, but it's not necessarily even a strength for that matter. So it'll be interesting to see when more late game situations come up. The Cleveland game might be close, so that could be something where we'll see some more plays drawn up in the clutch. Speaking of the Cleveland game, let's try and get some predictions for this game. Who do you have winning this game on Sunday, Salim?
Cleveland does seem to play better on the road, and the Bulls are still, looks like they're still trying to figure things out. I can see it being a close game if Cleveland maybe pulls it out in the end, maybe by like, you know, like by like a 3 or 5 point margin.
Yeah, I'm thinking this is definitely winnable from both sides. Both teams are 8-25. Cleveland, as you mentioned, they play better on their home floor. In Chicago, they're kind of hit or miss whenever they're on the road. But if we're basing anything off the Orlando game, where Orlando's kind of a low-scoring team that doesn't really have a ton of offensive talent, and Cleveland is probably in a similar boat, this should probably be kind of like a low-scoring, grinded-out game as well. So if that's the case, maybe a slight edge to the Bulls. Maybe like a 92 to like 91 type of game I could see. I'm not sure, but it seems like these are the type of games that the Bulls typically win, because I think they're undefeated against teams that are in their range record-wise, like in the second, third, fourth, fifth worst records in the league. I think they're undefeated against those teams, Atlanta, Phoenix, Cleveland. I think New York is the other one. So maybe the Bulls should probably win this game. They'll probably continue that streak against those teams.
Yeah, I mean, I can see them winning it. I don't know what consistency to expect from this team yet.
So with the current injuries to the team, that may be impacting some of the consistency. Zach LaVine, as we mentioned, out 2 to 4 weeks with an ankle sprain. And Bobby Portis is out 2 to 4 weeks as well with an ankle sprain. Let's get into, we talked about Zach a little bit last week in terms of what we were thinking from the injury, but let's talk about Bobby Portis mainly here. Portis started the season off with an MCL sprain, I believe, and he missed about a month. And now he comes back. I think he played like maybe 4 or 5 games. I can't remember, but he played briefly. And now he has an ankle sprain, and he's going to miss 2 to 4 weeks. What do you think the ramifications of these injuries are for the rest of the season for Portis in terms of what in terms of how it will impact his upcoming restricted free agency?
I think Bobby probably, I mean, in hindsight, maybe he should have tried to get an extension done, even if it wasn't maybe the number exactly what he was looking for. Because now he's probably going to go in, and who knows if he's going to get even the same offer that he was getting from the Bulls, because, you know, he's just been injured all year. Unless he finishes really strong, which is a possibility because he's not out, you know, that much longer. But it kind of hurts because, you know, you're still the conditioning aspect, you know, you're trying to come in and out of the lineup, you know, you're not playing, you're sitting, not being able to do any of the activities. So, you know, that hurts that regards, but it also kind of hurts the Bulls because you're trying to figure out, you know, how he fits long-term in the plans for the team and how he fits with the rest of the roster. And that's frustrating that in that regards too.
And Portis really could have been in line for a really big deal. Like, I think there are going to be more teams with money in the next summer. And that's kind of a big difference from last year where the market dried up pretty quickly. So it seemed like it was going to be a pretty good time for Portis to be a free agent. But as you mentioned, he may have been in a situation where getting a deal done now may have been, you know, more preferable than, you know, waiting until free agency, because, you know, these type of things do happen. And given that the Bulls do kind of have like somewhat of a glut of power forwards or bigs now, and that they're not really prioritizing what Portis can do individually, you know, there may have been more urgency to get a deal done now rather than later. But I guess he didn't really want to take what was likely a very team-friendly offer from the Bulls, since the Bulls didn't want to, you know, take away from their cap space in the offseason. But it really is sad, because Portis last year played really well for this team. And, you know, once you take out Nikola Mirotic after he was traded, you could definitely make the case that Portis was the best player for the Bulls last season. And his improvements throughout his career have been very steady and very consistent. He's improved as a jump shooter. He rebounds the ball well. He's kind of an underrated passer, I think, as well. And he's scoring from all over the floor. And obviously, his energy in terms of what he can do there, where he can just come in a game and kind of get lineups to have a little bit more life, kind of like, in a way, like that Joakim Noah effect, where it's just when he's on the floor, you know, everyone just plays differently in terms of a little bit of urgency, a little bit of excitement, energy. So, you know, Portis has definitely been a valuable player for the Bulls, especially on the salary he has for the 22nd pick in the draft. So it's very interesting to see these injuries come at the time that they have. And as you mentioned, it can just completely ruin your rhythm. It can completely ruin, you know, what you're trying to develop this season. And I'm not really like, I think there's a case now where you would maybe say that the Bulls have a higher chance of getting a team friendly deal for Portis, which could inevitably help them, I guess, as a trade chip. What would you think about that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you can get, you know, in that range that they're probably offering him, I think they're probably offering him around what he makes as a on his cap hold this offseason. I think it was like 7 or 8 million.
Yeah.
That's what they probably offered him on an annual basis. So, I mean, if they can re-sign him for that, you know, it could become a value deal where, you know, he could be moved later for some kind of asset in return, as opposed to losing him for nothing.
Is there a player in the league right now who may have already gotten a contract, or maybe even just like game-wise, that you would compare Portis to for his upcoming free agent case?
You know, I haven't really looked at that, to be honest. I mean, over the summer, you know, there was guys that were extended that, you know, you had guys like, not necessarily similar games, but like as far as overall that accomplish as much, and probably have, you know, are looked at as young players that are coming into their own, maybe in a sense. But like, you saw Justice Winslow get his contract. Miles Turner got extended. you know, things like that. You know, when you saw that, you thought, oh, maybe Bobby is somewhere between Miles Turner and Justice Winslow. I'm not sure. You know, you kind of saw that if he had a, you know, promising season. But it's hard to tell now because obviously with his injuries.
You know, I was thinking that somewhere in between Julius Randle and Kelly Olynyk might be kind of the range that he could fit in. I think Randle got somewhere around $8 or $9 million, and Olynyk a few years ago got around, I want to say around $10 or $11 million, maybe $12 million. And I feel like they're similar. Those are kind of like similar boats in terms of like quality of player and what you can do for a team. So yeah, so maybe Portis fits into that range, but these injuries are coming at such a bad time for him, and they're just really delaying, you know, what's been consistent improvement over his career. And, you know, last year he was one of, I think, about 8 or 9 players who averaged 20 and 10 per 36 minutes. And, you know, that list included a lot of all-star talent. So, you know, not to say that Portis is an all-star, but just speaks of a level of productivity that he's kind of reached, you know, in those 3 seasons.
Yeah, I agree. And it's frustrating for him, I'm sure, yeah.
So, Zach LaVine out 2 to 4 weeks. We talked about that a lot last week. Real quick on LaVine, do you think that this injury is a little bit more than what's kind of been out there? Like, we now know what it is, but is there like some feeling from you right now that there's like something more to this injury right now?
I don't know if it's something more. It's just annoying that he's hurt. And like I said, you know, it's frustrating that you can't get both him or all 3 of him, Dunn and Lowry, on the court together to gain chemistry. And obviously you have to factor Wendell into that as well. But obviously Wendell not as much because he's not taking as much offensive sets factoring offensively into the game plan. You know, he's kind of more of an opportunity scorer and being more of a defensive guy and getting on the board. But mainly with Lowry, Dunn, and Zach, you know, you kind of want to. They haven't played well together overall, and in general, don't have much time, you know, playing with each other. So that's the only real annoying and disappointing part about this injury.
There's definitely a growing sentiment, I think, that these pieces really don't fit because, you know, as we mentioned last week, it seems like when Dunn was out, LaVine was playing really well. LaVine goes out, Dunn seems a little bit more comfortable operating with the ball, you know, Markkanen getting more touches when some of those guys miss games too. It's just very weird to see all of that happen, you know, when you just see these players individually going off when the others are out of a lineup. So that is definitely frustrating. But in regards to LaVine's injury, like I guess I don't really want to spectate or speculate, but it's, to me, I don't know why, but I just can't get this feeling out of my mind that there's a little something more to this injury than, you know, what's been out there, because it seemed really odd that it took a while for them to just, we knew what happened. They had the MRI. He was seeing a lot of specialists and things like that. And, you know, we finally got this, you know, timeline of 2 to 4 weeks, but the initial thing that LaVine had said was he felt like a pop or something in his ankle. And I don't know, like, is 2 to 4 weeks, again, I'm not really qualified to say what that is, but it just seems like a pop in an ankle is a lot more than what the 2 to 4 week timeline might represent. But I don't know, it's, maybe I'm just being paranoid here, but it just seems like this injury is something a little bit more. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, you never know with the Bulls because historically they've been terrible at, you know, diagnosing injuries and saying how bad some injury would be. You know, they always say that there's an injury has a certain level, a certain range of being out, and all of a sudden the person's missing more extended time. Obviously, with Val, they said, oh, the ankle, he's going to be out, you know, and then it was, he was going to be out for 4 weeks, and then it was, you know, oh, a little bit longer, out indefinitely, and then all of a sudden he needs season ending surgery. Lowry's injury was, you know, just, you know, it wasn't serious, and all of a sudden he's going to be out for 2 months. So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely, you know, going there. And in general, I would say, like, you got to wonder what's going on with these, with them over the, since I would say 2012, it's been consistent issue with injuries. So at some point it's just like, well, it's not all a coincidence anymore. There's something they're doing that they have to be doing something wrong as far as, you know, the health and nutrition or whatever, you know, I don't know if it's their training staff or what, but something's off that, you know, these guys on their team keep dropping like flies every year.
Yeah, it's been consistent throughout coaching staffs, because the original theory was that Tom Thibodeau was working everybody too hard. And, you know, I won't lie, there was a time where I definitely bought into that as well, because, you know, we knew that Thibodeau had some really physical practices, and we knew that, you know, what he demanded from players, especially in games and, you know, keeping such a tight rotation was definitely a little hard. So there was a time where I bought into that, but now, you know, again, we've had two different coaches now, and it just seems like the injuries just keep piling on, and just one after the other. So I don't know what it is, but it would be interesting to see if the Bulls actually one day decide to look like really in-depth about what is going on behind the scenes in terms of their practices, nutrition, training style, you know, just look at the entire package and see what's really going on with everything so they can find out better ways to, you know, prevent injuries and, you know, some of the things that have just really been happening.
Yeah, you know, it's like I said, they need to look, they need to do a really deep dive and figure out what's going on, because it just can't be a coincidence anymore.
Yeah, definitely agree on that. So closing out some of the Bulls discussion for this week, we talked about Jabari Parker. He's on the trade block for the Chicago Bulls. He's trade eligible as of December 15th. Last week, there was a report that 15 teams had contacted the Bulls expressing preliminary interest about trading for Jabari Parker, who is making $20 million this year, has a team option for another $20 million next season that likely will not be picked up. So we talked about the value of his contract in terms of getting a team out of a pretty bad deal. So Jabari as a financial asset is very good in that regard. So one of the interesting rumors this week was that Jabari Parker has been a topic of discussion for the New York Knicks, who were one of the teams that reached out to the Chicago Bulls. And the New York Knicks have a few contracts out there right now that they're trying to get off the books. One is Courtney Lee, who is making $12 million this season, and then will finish out his contract next season for about $12.75 million. So that's one of the options. Tim Hardaway Jr. has 3 years left on his deal as well. So what do you think about the New York Knicks as a trade partner for Jabari Parker? And do you see anything kind of coming of that in terms of, you know, both sides coming together and trying to work something out in terms of, you know, what incentive the New York Knicks could possibly give to the Chicago Bulls to move them and take a bad contract?
You know, it's interesting, like, kind of thinking jokingly how the Bulls have, you know, traded for point guards that haven't done anything, like young point guards that haven't done anything in this league, and trying to find, you know, a point guard still or whatever. I'm not, you know, there was that rumor that they weren't still on Chris Dunn yet, so maybe they would trade for Frank on, what was it? I can't pronounce his last name.
Nidokina?
Yeah, something like that, because he's been pretty bad as far as he wasn't all that good last year, and this year he's about the same. So I don't know. I would prefer draft picks. I don't know what they could get from New York, to be honest. When I look at their roster, there's, unless you're giving me like Allen Robinson, but then we, not Allen Robinson. I'm sorry.
got Bears on the mind.
is it Marcus Robinson?
Mitchell Robinson.
Mitchell Robinson. Sorry, yeah. Mitchell. I couldn't think of his first name. I apologize. Like he's a nice young player, but I mean we have a lot of bigs, and I doubt they would want to, you know, throw him in as someone because they want to, you know, accumulate good players too. And then, you know, I guess if they maybe could you get a first rounder for him? I'm not sure. I think you would have to take on a lot of amount of salary to, you know, get a first round pick. I'm guessing maybe a couple of second rounders. That's what I'm expecting most in return for Jabari. It's probably a couple of second rounders, depending on how much salary they're willing to take. Like if they're willing to take a decent amount, I can see them getting a first and a second. But outside of that, I think the Bulls aren't looking to take on additional salary. It doesn't seem like they are. So I'm thinking that it's probably going to be more of like a. I'm guessing they'll probably do like either they'll trade for. 1 year swaps, like someone else has a 1 year deal and they'll do a swap in that regard to see if it's better fit for each other's teams, or they'll just buy them out.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't really see much on this front happening. I think Tim Hardaway's contract would be the one that's most likely to be moved here because he's making 17.3 this year, 18 next year, and then close to 19 million the year after that, which is a player option that he probably is definitely going to exercise and opt into. But they're probably not going to give up Mitchell Robinson. Ntilikina is interesting, but I think they would be able to get something better for him in terms of, you know, just the, you know, interest in him around the league of being a former high draft pick and, you know, being a pretty strong defender. So they probably would not use him to get rid of a deal like Hardaway or something like that. So I'm not sure second rounders are worth it to take on Hardaway's deal, though.
No.
Yeah, because
for him, I would definitely want, like, with Tim Hardaway, I would definitely want a first.
Yeah. I would agree with that, even though, because, you know, you've always mentioned that the second rounders in whenever they're expected to end the high school or start the high school to NBA thing, that you think the second rounders for that year would be pretty valuable because it would be the high school class for that year combined with the college class from that year, and it could end up being a, you know, really, really talented draft for at least that 1 year. So maybe the second rounders from that year would be very valuable. I think that'd be, what, 2021 or 2022?
22, yeah. You're going to get the one and done rule is going to get lifted. So that's when you're going to have not only the, you know, prep stars coming in, but like the players from the year before that, you know, went into college for a year. You know, it's going to be that's that draft where you had some players that were in that 20 to 30 range maybe drop into the second round because, you know, there's so many players that so, you know, the second rounder turns more into a late first round pick value wise.
Yeah, those could be interesting picks to get, though. We know with the Bulls' history of second rounders that they might use those picks to sweeten, you know, another deal up, you know, way before that draft class comes. So there's no guarantee that the Bulls would actually use those. But yeah, I'm in agreement with you that I think that the Bulls and Knicks are not really ideal trade partners here unless the New York Knicks are interested in giving the Bulls a first round pick to move a contract like Tim Hardaway Jr. Though, I guess the other question is, I know the Knicks have been attached to like Kevin Durant and all these other like stars coming up in free agency. And I don't know if they're like how hard they're planning on chasing those guys. But my question would be if Tim Hardaway's contract was something that was standing in the way of them being able to pursue like two max contracts, maybe that would be reason for them to give up like a protected first rounder with Tim Hardaway to get, you know, to get rid of his contract.
Yeah, that would be something that, you know, you were on a look at, but we'll see. I mean, it all depends on what the Bulls want to do, because it's, are they willing to give up, you know, the cap space this summer to make the deal happen? That's the key. And I don't know if they are.
Yeah, we'll see what comes in the upcoming months before the trade deadline with Jabari Parker to see what the Bulls' strategy here is with whether or not they'll take on salary to accommodate a move for Jabari Parker. Well, that's our show for this week. Thank you for tuning in. And as always, we appreciate all the fan support. Please check us out on Twitter at Bulls Gold. We're tweeting during every Bulls game. And we will be back for episode 27 next week. So for Salim Sudarwala, I'm Edward Schuler. This has been episode 26 of Bulls Gold.